At this time, I will call the Siskiyou County Regular Planning Commission meeting of March 17th to order. Would you all please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we get into roll call, this meeting is being agendized to allow planning commissioner, staff, and the public to participate in the meeting via teleconference in pursuit to Governor's Executive Order N-29-20 dated March 17, 2020. Members of the public will be allowed to listen and to participate in this meeting via teleconference only. The call-in number for this meeting is 1-669-900-6833. Zoom meeting ID 853-5636-4084. Press 9 to raise your hand to speak. We have been told that participating via the Zoom app may result in better audio quality. Roll call.
Commissioner Lindler?
Here.
Commissioner Fowle?
Present.
Commissioner Veal?
Here.
Commissioner Hart?
Hold on. Yes, unmute.
Chair Fowle?
Chair Fowle, or I'm sorry, Chair Mello?
Here.
Thank you.
I'm still present.
Yes.
Next item is approval of the minutes of February 17, 2021.
I'll approve the minutes.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries 5-0. Any person may address the commission on any subject matter within the jurisdiction or responsibility of the commission at the beginning of the meeting, or may elect to address the commission on any agenda item at the time the item is called by the chair, but before the matter is acted upon by the commission. Unscheduled comments will be limited to 5 minutes.
Please press star 9 if you'd like to raise your hand to comment on an item that is not on the agenda. Seeing none. Commissioner Hart, I'd like to ask you to mute your phone on your end so that you can unmute as you need to. Is that possible?
I'll do that.
Thank you.
Any conflict of interest?
No.
All documents presented to the Planning Commission during a public hearing became a permanent part of the record. 12 copies of any information.
Chair,
yes, sir.
Not a conflict, but just so it's on the record, the Berry Hill project, he cleans ditch for us periodically and hauls manure off the place periodically. Just so everyone's aware, we do have a business relationship.
Okay, thank you. 12 copies of any information presented to the commission should be given to the clerk of the commission for distribution to the commissioners. In order to obtain an accurate record of the testimony, please address the commission at the speaking table and clearly introduce yourself with your full name and address. Your address will not be included in the minutes of the meeting. A maximum of 5 minutes per speaker will be given so that all interested parties will have an opportunity to address the commission. The public hearing protocol is listed in the agenda. Projects heard at the Planning Commission meeting may be subject to appeal within 10 calendar days of today's meeting. If the 10th day falls on the weekend, the appeal must be received the following business day. Please contact the county clerk for information. Appeals must be submitted to the county clerk's office with the appeal fee of $1,250. If you challenge the environmental review of the project proposal in court, you may be limited to raising only those issues raised at the public hearing or in written correspondence delivered to Siskiyou County Planning at or prior to the public hearing. Any changes to the agenda?
No changes to the agenda.
There is no old business under new business. At this time, I am going to turn it over to staff, to Rick Dean. He is the planning director. Mr. Dean.
Thank you, Chair. Rick Dean, Community Development Director. In our new business, we have Mr. Matt Parker, Natural Resource Policy Specialist for the County of Siskiyou. We'll be doing an update of the CIGMA program, the groundwater management plan, which is in process. It is not completed this time. So this is just an informational presentation for the commission to update them on situations, not for deliberation or comment. So at this point, I'll turn it over to Mr. Parker.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. And as you said, I have a really high-level sort of overview of where we're at with the CIGMA process. It would be great to get into some of the nuances of what's occurring, but there's not enough time in the day to get through it all right now. So we'll keep it really high level. And I basically encourage everyone to, if they're that interested, participate through advisory committee meetings. Scott Valley was yesterday, Shasta Valley is later this afternoon. That's sort of the hub of where we do a lot of the work. So I guess,
what does CIGMA stand for?
State Groundwater Management.
Yeah.
Act.
Okay. So yeah, lots of acronyms in CIGMA. CIGMA again is a Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. Basically, it's a law passed in 2015 requiring groundwater basins to become sustainable, create sustainability plans, etc. So in Siskiyou County, we have four medium priority basins. There's four different classifications, but medium priority basins are required to do a plan. So for my purposes, I'm here mainly for three of the four: Shasta Valley, Scott Valley, View Valley. And then Tule Lake Basin is the fourth, I guess I shouldn't say the fourth basin, but another basin. And it's a little different in that it's overseeing agencies is the Tule Lake Irrigation District, but there's an MOU that combines Tule Lake Irrigation, Siskiyou, Modoc County, and the City of Tule Lake as sort of the GSA or the agency that oversees that process. The plans, GSPs as they're known for, are due January 31st of 2022, and Department of Water Resources is the overarching state agency that oversees this. And the State Water Board is the enforcement agency should any enforcement actions come. So the various roles in this process, as I said, I'm here mainly to provide an update on Butte, Scott, and Shasta. So the Flood Control District is GSA, meaning they're the sort of the governing body, I guess, so to speak, of those three valleys. As you guys know, the Board of Supervisors sits as the Flood Control District Board, and so they have the ultimate decision-making for the CIGMA process. Natural Resources staff manages the process through a couple of DWR-provided grants, Prop 1, Prop 68. We were able to hire our Larry Walker Associates as our consultants to do the really technical work. Many of those staff are, you would know from their work at UC Davis, Dr. Laura Foglia, Dr. Thomas Harder. They've been doing groundwater modeling work in Scott Valley for 10 plus years now. So many of the names are via UC Davis that we're all familiar with. We also have a facilitator to help us sort of manage the committee meetings, assist with any conflicts between, you know, other parties. That is provided through DWR. We had to do an application process for that, but it's all paid through their program. Our facilitator now, we recently changed last fall. Katie Duncan is through Stantec Consulting, a big statewide consulting firm. We've recently contracted with an outside legal firm to assist with reviewing the plans in terms of checking the boxes, dotting the I's, crossing the T's, making sure the plans won't conflict with water rights or any other government code. Anything along those lines that's going to put the district or the county or just the community in general at risk of having some conflicts within the plan itself. That legal firm is Somax Simmons and Dunn's. Somax Simmons and Dunn, Aaron Ferguson is the lead counsel for that. And then lastly, as I mentioned a little earlier, we sort of utilize these advisory committees as the hub of where we do a lot of the work. At the end of their time, so to speak, they will provide a final recommendation to the board regarding, you know, approving the plan and everything within that. It's made up of every interest we could find within all the basins: residential, municipal, private pumpers, irrigation districts. We have tribal reps and environmental conservation interests represented. So the groundwater plan. This is sort of the six chapters within a plan. I won't go through all these. You can go to the next slide. I have them broke out a little further. So chapter one, basically introduction. A lot of just boilerplate stuff. Nothing real substantive. Chapter two is sort of, as it says, it's the basin setting. It basically sets up everything you need to know now to develop the plan. There's a couple iterations that the technical folks have drafted. We've had a little bit of public input. It's on hold right now in terms of we're awaiting some additional material from different management monitoring programs, just additional language we need. There's a notice and communication section. With the help of our previous facilitator, we created a communication engagement plan. That was given a thumbs up by the board, I think last summer. So that's a really important piece of the process that we've completed. Near the bottom, the water budget information is a key piece because that's where a lot of folks, where we make our decision on whether the basin in a whole either improves or gets worse. And so think of it as a checkbook if we're adding water or losing water. That is ongoing, and we'll have a final, the technical team has to do a future water budget where under DWR's requirements in the law, they have to run climate change scenarios. So we have to look at what potentially the water budget looks like in the future down the road. And then there's also sections for management areas. It's been discussed, but what I mean by management areas is think of the Shasta. There's a lot of dynamics within the Shasta Valley. You have the eastern part of the valley where you have the volcanics and the lava tube aquifers, and then you have the west side of the valley, which is a lot of just alluvial fan and deep soil. So you could theoretically break those up into management areas. However, if we did that, we would have to create all the metrics separately, and that would take time and effort and a little more science. And so that's something we may look at down the road, because it would sort of make sense from a practical management aspect. As far as getting that within the plan was going to be very difficult. So chapter three is the Sustainable Management Criteria, or SMC, another acronym, sometimes referred to as the metrics. These are really the measuring sticks of the plan. This is sort of the key piece of the plan where we are able to evaluate our success. And there's six criteria. Groundwater levels and groundwater storage are really one and the same, and that's been sort of the key discussion going on in Butte Valley. They have a little bit of history of declining water levels, not severe like you see in the Central Valley, but it's enough to be sort of the underlying issue or process in Butte. Depletion of interconnected surface waters, and I should have added by groundwater extraction. That's a mouthful. It's basically the relationship between groundwater use and stream flow. As we all know, that's a big discussion topic in Scott and Shasta Valley. Water quality, that's something that we, all three basins, will have to account for. And that has gone through just as of really now, gone through a public review. We've received comments for Scott and Shasta, and we allowed Scott Valley last night, Shasta Valley today, any verbal comments from the public on the water quality section. Subsidence is really a non-issue in the valley, but something we have to sort of check the box on. That was also included in the water quality chapter for review. And seawater intrusion obviously is not applicable. If it is, we have way bigger problems. And then this is sort of the nuances within Chapter 3 that we have to have in the plan. I guess the last item, monitoring networks, that's a key piece, obviously, as we'll have to, or we are developing a network so that we can track how we're doing in terms of our metrics we put in place. Chapter 4 is the projects and management actions. That's basically any, as it says, any project or action that we feel we want to include in the plan that would help achieve sustainability. These can be projects that are ongoing, concrete plans are being implemented, or simply brainstorm projects that have been sort of discussed in just an open nature, and that's about it. So we in Scott Valley, that was the main focus of our discussion last night, and we have quite a bit of projects to include in the plan. And so within the projects, there's a couple of things, is that the GSA or the agency or the county, whatever you want to call us, we can do a couple things. We can take ownership of these projects and actions, or we can work with other entities to implement these projects. So it's not like we have to do all these projects. We can work with the various entities, landowners, municipals, whomever, to get these projects enacted. Chapter 5 is the implementation. The bad word for that could be enforcement, but that's really how we're going to actually implement the plan moving forward. Chapter 6, self-explanatory, really the appendix for all the documents that support the plan. So switching gears, here's sort of a timeline or milestones that we have. As you see in bright red, the plan is absolutely due January 31st of 2022. So we sort of reverse engineered this, so we have plenty of time to get through all the steps. And so we've targeted the end of June as our last advisory committee meeting to have a final recommendation from them that we would then bring to the board. And so that sets up for about July, a couple of things would happen. We would have a public workshop where we'd release the final draft. It's open for public review, available for comment. It also opens up a notice of consultation with any cities or agencies that would like to consult with the GSA on the plan. And then it's also a 90-day public hearing announcement. The board is required to adopt the plans at a public hearing. And so with the July date, we're looking at November as the target for the board to approve the plan, to officially approve the plan. And that gives us, you know, a little bit of flexibility should things go, you know, wrong during the process between November and January 31st to submit the plan. So, and then as you see right away, we have yearly reports due on April 1st of every year. And then you also see there that DWR has 2 years to review the plan and give their final decision. However, that doesn't mean we still can immediately implement the plan as soon as it's sort of approved as submitted by DWR. So it's to me that sounds a little strange, but that's the rules. That we can implement a plan even though DWR hasn't approved it. So, and then we can review and update the plan every 5 years up until 2042. That's Sigma, last couple years of work in 5 minutes. So, I guess if there's any clarification questions, well, I'm happy to answer those.
And if I can just comment, if you do have any legal hypotheticals or questions, and you probably won't know maybe until you try to ask, our office would ask that we communicate with you by confidential memo afterwards. So to the extent you have any questions, you're certainly feel free to ask now. It may be more appropriate for our office to comment in writing confidentially at some point.
Well, just hypothetically, once you've done the study and you've reviewed the issues at hand, what is the action that you would take?
That's being worked on sort of as we speak.
What's that?
That's being worked on as we speak right now. So we're doing a lot of background work now and putting it into the plan so that we can determine actions that we want to do. And that's what we have monitoring and stuff like that
too. Could you give me an example of actions you would take?
Mark, could you get a little closer?
Yeah, I was thinking.
If it's difficult for you to answer, that's okay.
It sort of is because I don't want to give an example and get it wrong. I'm trying to think of something really simple that would. I'd have to chew on that.
Well, maybe it just seems to me that a lot of balls in the air and what we do once you.
That is correct. There's a lot of moving parts with Sigma, and it's unfortunate that I come to meetings like this and others and people ask questions, and I legitimately can say I don't know right now because we haven't enacted the plan.
I'd be happy to comment on the Planning Commission's place in all this explicitly. Right now, the plan, the GSP, is fully within the flight control district's purview right now, and they're writing it. And to the extent that the County of Siskiyou has any input, as Mr. Parker just briefed a little bit a while ago, you know, any city or the county could then comment during the comment period during the draft. Is that right, Mr. Parker?
Correct.
And then it's finally up to them and completely up to the flood control district as to the final approval of however the plan looks like. Where the Planning Commission would eventually get involved in after the plan is approved or whatever, which looks like it will be early 2022, and we are amending at some point our own county general plan, the Planning Commission then becomes involved in considering the general plan in relation to the groundwater sustainability plan that they just will have enacted, or whatever we consider the general plan. And at that point, the two entities, you know, would want to work to make sure whatever general plan amendments are fitting in with the groundwater sustainability plan. So right now, Planning Commission involvement is way, way down the road. We don't have, the Flood Control District doesn't have a plan yet, and we wouldn't get involved until we actually started amending our general plan in some way. So it's all fairly distant and hypothetical, and as such, that makes our role right now very limited. So.
Thank you, Council. Mr. Parker, thank you, County, for your presentation.
You bet. Thank you all.
Thank you.
And once again, anybody, any commissioner is welcome in writing to call me or email me and ask any questions. And I'd be glad to get back to you. And that's with any item, not just this one. So I feel there's probably more questions out there and you're probably holding fire. So feel free to contact me offline since.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
See you, Matt.
See you, guys.
Mr. Dean, are we able to move on?
Yes, Chair. Please move forward. Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is the Berry Hill Vesting Tentative Parcel Map, TPM-20-06. Staff report, please.
Thank you. This is Bernadette Sisson, Assistant Planner. Wade DeDoblier of ENS Engineers and Surveyors is requesting approval of a vesting tentative parcel map to subdivide an existing 53.39 acre parcel into four parcels and a remainder parcel. The subject property is located on Kidder Creek Road, approximately 1 mile west of the community of Greenview. The four new 10.74 acre proposed parcels are within the RRB5 zoning district, which allows a minimum parcel size of 5 acres. The proposed 10.43 acre remainder parcel is within the AG2 zoning district, which allows a minimum parcel size of 10 acres. The four new parcels would be accessed from an existing private road. Proposed parcel one and the remainder parcel would also have access to Kidder Creek Road. This vacant property is developed with a small man-made pond and a road. The project is consistent with the Subdivision Map Act, General Plan, Scott Valley Area Plan, and zoning for its area. This project is proposed to be exempt from CEQA pursuant to sections 15061B3 and 15301C and 15304. No public comments were received for this project. Environmental Health, CAL FIRE, and the Treasurer Tax Collector commented on this project regarding their requirements. The applicant team has reached out to planning staff regarding the naming of the private road. They would like to amend the project, changing the proposed private name from Berry Hill Court to Earl Smith Place. Planning has no objections to the new proposed name. Staff recommends determining the project categorically exempt and approving this vesting tentative parcel map with the road name revised to Earl Smith Place. There is a suggested motion in the packet. Thank you.
Any questions of staff at this time?
A week till after.
At this time, I will open the public hearing.
Please press *9 if you would like to comment on this item. Seeing none.
At this time, we will close the public hearing and bring it back to the commission.
I have a couple of questions. You ready for this?
Yes, sir.
Although this is in Jeff's backyard, I did take a drive Saturday, beautiful day, finished up with a ice cream cone at Dottie's. Made it all worthwhile. Tell me, this is zone, minimum zoning 5 acres, correct? He's asking for, you're recommending 10 acres, or the applicant is recommending 10 acres. But what is to prevent someone from, after this is approved, of coming in for a lot split to get that 5 acres?
So I'll let Planner Susan answer this, but it's my understanding that the parcel is split zoned. It contains multiple zoning designations. So a resultant parcel will have to meet the most restrictive standard of the zoning that occurs on the property.
Which is?
So the remainder parcel will be completely zoned at 2, which has a minimum 10 acre parcel size.
Correct.
And
the other four
are restricted to 5 acres.
Right. So they could come in and request a lot split.
They could.
Secondly, there's no road maintenance agreement in this. Don't we normally ask for a road maintenance agreement?
Right. It would meet a road definition per CAL FIRE standards. We may consider it a private driveway since it serves 4 residential parcels. Generally, there is a requirement in regards to access easement, which also includes maintenance. We can take a look and see if that was included on the tentative parcel map exhibit.
Generally, I may also comment, with many of these private subdivisions, and I live in one myself, the road maintenance is done by a common private document, such as a CC&R. And even when this split occurs, I suspect probably the developer would normally impose a CC&R regarding road maintenance. There'd probably be joint contributions from
the property. I think in the past we've required that. Did we not?
It may be likely, so there is no county code that requires it. However, it is included in your scope of review, and it's a common mechanism that we see in subdivisions, just to ensure that the roadway is properly maintained, and each property owner has their fair share of maintenance.
I think we've required it in the past when we've had different landowners utilizing the road, and in this case, it's one road, one landowner.
But it would be split to four.
Doesn't matter. That's not within our purview. That's up to the landowner or the project proponent and how they decide to sell the land. If there were a second or a third property owner that was already using that road, then we may look at it. But in this case, it's one project, one owner, four parcels.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd have to agree. I'm unaware of any statutory requirement that the county must impose a road maintenance requirement the way the project stands right now.
Does it have to meet county specifications for a road?
The requirements that the road will have to meet are related to CAL FIRE and 4290 standards.
I don't care. It's an awful clean way to present a project to have a road maintenance agreement. But this Scotch Foursome LLC has access to that road, right? It's just east of the...
Is that the property owner of record?
Yeah, looks like it.
Yes, so the property owner is proposing a roadway on their property, so they have access to that road. Should they sell in the future, the future buyer and the existing property owner will likely negotiate or come to some sort of agreement, whether that's recordation of a private access easement, a maintenance easement. That is something they can utilize in the future should the existing current property owner wish to sell.
Yeah. You're also requiring fire hydrants for the parcels, is that correct? I think I saw that was...
I'm not entirely sure.
Oh, it's on there somewhere.
I didn't see anything.
Yeah, it did.
Jeff, where's this one?
It's the very last page.
Is it?
Very last page of the e-file.
Right. I believe our condition is condition of approval 7, which just requires documentation that the project meets 4290 standards.
This is CAL FIRE's request.
You're right. So if CAL FIRE identified that this project would need a fire hydrant, it should be located within the common.
Yeah, it is. It also is the size of the hydrants and valves. It's on page 12. So that means a private well then would...
Yeah, I see that. Yes, according to the application of the section, it says the provisions of this article shall apply in the tentative and parcel map process when parcels are approved by the local jurisdiction having authority. So it sounds like that section does apply and CAL FIRE is requiring fire hydrants being installed.
I guess you mean if you drill a well, then you have to supply a hydrant with adequate water, apparently.
Right, the property owner will have to meet to the satisfaction of CAL FIRE their standards prior to development.
That's interesting.
Yes.
Because it's outside of a city. It's in rural Siskiyou County, Scott Valley. This is the first time I've seen CAL FIRE place a condition to have fire hydrants for a lot split.
So I believe they just provided the entire documents related to the applicable sections. What we did see, if you recall last month in regards to the west tentative parcel map, their comment identified that potential on-site water storage would be required. In addition, CAL FIRE does have some leniency within their own regulations to approve alternatives, so it's likely that maybe a fire hydrant isn't required, but maybe some sort of above-ground water storage, water tanks for emergency wildfire purposes are located if development is proposed.
There's nothing near this site to burn. It's rock and gravel. Nice site.
If it's within the SRA, then
right, it is within the SRA. I'm wondering if it has to do with some of the recent regulations and laws in California, which took insurance away from agriculture and forcing us to hopefully go into the FAIR plan. I'm wondering if it's part of that because it's within 1 mile of a potential wildfire site, which it is within 1 mile. Interesting.
If I may, CAL FIRE's response letter does cite under water standards 1275.02 as not required as an ISO rated fire station of 8B/10 is within 5 miles of the project, and that is not referring to the section of hydrants and fire valves. Hydrants and fire valves are 1275.03. It's not within their recommendation.
Okay, so it, hydrants are not, because it is, I mean, it's within 2 miles of the water tender there in Greenview.
Correct.
Probably less than that, about a mile and a quarter in a straight line. Okay, yes. So hydrants aren't required then.
That's not what they referenced.
That's what I thought.
Yeah,
okay.
They built in kind of flexibility.
It was an umbrella, general statements,
yeah,
could,
yeah,
but isn't necessary. Okay.
Yeah.
I was good. That's not how I read that.
Well, yeah, and I'm looking at 1275.02, which says, begins when saying, when a water supply for structure defense is required to be installed. We're not requiring a water supply for defense to be installed, and I think the hydrant requirements would refer back to the water defense structure.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes more sense. That's how I interpreted it also. Okay.
Any further comments? If not, I will entertain a motion.
Let me scroll back here.
Through the chair?
Yes, sir.
Just a reminder, the applicant team did request a slight modification to the approval, requesting a name change to the road that was identified on the exhibit map. For clarification purposes, this is important because all roads within the county, whether they're public or private, it, once they are approved with a specific name, in order to change that name, they have to go back to the Board of Supervisors to get approval. So should the commission have no objections to the road name change, the commission should include that in their motion.
And the name that is desired
Earl
is now what?
Earl Smith Place.
Earl Smith
Place.
Yes.
And that's instead of Barry Hillcourt?
Correct.
Who is Earl Smith?
I know a lot of Smiths. It must be one of the old-time Smiths. Not sure what the lineage is to our place. Okay. So with that, I will move that we adopt resolution PC-2021-007, a resolution of the Planning Commission of the County of Siskiyou, State of California, determining the project exempt from the California Environmental Quality Act and approving the Berry Hill Vesting Tentative Parcel Map, TPM-20-006, with the amendment to the road name change to Earl Smith Place.
A second.
We have a motion and a second. This is a voice vote. Any other comments? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Commissioner Hart, just to clarify, you voted aye. Commissioner Hart, I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Yes, I voted yes on it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rachel. So be it. Motion carries 5-0. Items for discussion or direction. Miscellaneous. The next regular Planning Commission meeting is scheduled on Wednesday, April 21st, 2021 at 9 a.m.
Your daughter's birthday.
I won't be.
When's yours?
You won't be.
20th.
Okay.
That's how I always remember yeah. Susie's.
Correspondence. Staff comments.
I'll comment on the vacation rentals. As probably news to nobody up there, the Board of Supervisors did not enact a moratorium. Even though the moratorium got approved 3-2 under the special ordinance proceedings we were going under, sort of an urgency moratorium, it required 4 votes. There was only 3 votes. So therefore, the vacation rental moratorium didn't pass. Had it gone forward as a regular ordinance, it actually would have passed. I think the general tenor was, maybe of those voting against it, and certainly Kirk or Rick are free to add, was I think partly quantitatively there weren't maybe enough vacation rentals to be worried about a moratorium, and otherwise, you know, there was some, could have been some economic impact. There was not any public comment save for one letter, so it wasn't quite as high profile as maybe one might have expected. And anyway, so that's my comment, and you're certainly free to comment further. And then Commissioner Veal asked regarding community service districts last month. I looked into it. Technically, there can be in a county under the state government code, multiple planning commissions within a county. There doesn't have to be just one. Community service districts per se cannot be suddenly doubled into as planning commissions, although theoretically, as I saw happen in one city, you can appoint the community service district as a planning commission. So it's all very theoretically possible. It's a very high level decision. But it is possible to have more than one planning commission within the county. I'll say that as a matter of simple statement. I don't think most counties do, but it is possible.
Talk about stirring the mix.
Yeah.
Well, my concern was that it seems like it takes a lot of your time, the staff time, and something that's very volatile down there, and my idea is we'll best put it back to the local district, the government closest to the people. If there isn't any desire on the community services district to deal with it, so be it. But we'll just continue to roll through them and pass them better.
Yeah, and there'd have to be desire on both ends. The board would have to want to choose.
Thank you, Bill. I'd just like to add to that, essentially, the primary issue is in South County. Mm-hmm. You know, so the Northern County supervisors didn't feel comfortable with the countywide moratorium. So this will likely be revisited. And the initial proposal was under urgency ordinance. What I'm gathering is probably going to be coming to the Planning Commission if they revisit this, which is highly likely. So this is heads up to you guys.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned, yeah.
So when you say come to us in the form of a proposed ordinance, regarding vacation rental, bed and breakfast, etc., or just vacation rentals, short-term rentals?
Yeah, the potential moratorium on short-term vacation rentals.
So we would be seeing a moratorium, not an ordinance.
It's an ordinance for moratorium.
Well, the moratorium would be an ordinance. So you would be seeing a proposed ordinance.
And providing a recommendation.
We avoided you, not to tag back and forth here, the Planning Commission got avoided by virtue of a special mechanism in the state code that we didn't have to go through the Planning Commission if we proceeded by four fiscal at Board of Supervisors, but that didn't work. So, but the moratorium is an ordinance, and if we enact it in a regular way, as a regular ordinance, it must come through you as a zoning ordinance.
So, speaking for myself, if I get a proposed ordinance for a moratorium on something, I want to know that there is a solution to deal with what that said moratorium is pertaining to. Period. I will not support a blanket moratorium on anything unless there's a proposed solution accompanying it.
Staff agrees.
But sometimes it can be a length of time, doesn't necessarily have to have a solution, right?
And staff would include such justification and data until with any moratorium moving forward.
Until something happens.
No, we wouldn't just bring forward a moratorium with no explanation.
And is that expected this year?
Potentially, yes. We believe we will get direction within a month or two. Okay.
Do you have a lot of them in the works?
No, we are currently on average with the last 3 years.
I mean, there are some out there.
Yes, we still have applications for use permits requesting short-term vacation rentals that will be in front of the Planning Commission when they are ready.
Any other comments from the commission?
I'd like to make a comment, please.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I had a discussion with a contractor, and his wife is also has a real estate firm about this topic, and they're pretty fired up about it. They're figuring that there would be at least a 20% economic impact and a decrease of property values if this thing goes through. And so, this thing going forward, the county does have a Realtors Association, and I suspect maybe some comment from those folks about all of that. I know that I can see both sides of the argument about lack of housing, but also when people buy second homes, to restrict their ability to earn some income off of that through a vacation rental, if it meets a CEQA threshold by putting a limit on it from this point forward, how many unpermitted vacation rentals, Airbnbs that are out there, are you folks then going to go through, I'm talking about staff, going to go through the process of ferreting those entities out and putting a cease to their operations? I know there are advertisers out there, but it's been one of those problems that's been there for a long time. So I just wanted to throw that out there for food for thought.
Any other comments? This meeting stands adjourned.